Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Friday, February 16th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to celebrate the 40th anniversary of Footloose. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor BJ Colangelo.
Hi.
All right, BJ, before we get going, I just wanted to drop a quick admin note here at the top of the show. We're not going to have an episode of Slash Film Daily on Monday because it is President's Day. So with that out of the way, tomorrow actually marks the official 40th anniversary of Footloose. And I was just curious, let's kick things off by, like, what is your relationship to this movie?
Oh, Footloose is an old favorite of mine. This is a movie that I watched as a child with my mom. She loved to do a double feature of Dirty Dancing and Footloose. That was like mother-daughter extravaganza day, is watching both of those movies on like a random Sunday.
I was going to say, like, I'm interested that you brought up Dirty Dancing immediately, because it kind of feels like one of my big takeaways from this movie. First of all, I just watched it for the very first time, like a couple days ago.
That's so wild to me how you've been able to escape it for this long, really.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, my mom is a big fan of this movie. I just, like, it wasn't one of the VHS tapes that we owned in my house. And I think I just had absorbed so much of it through cultural osmosis that I never felt the need to actually just, like, sit down and rent it and watch it all the way through. But I finally corrected that this week, or a few days ago anyway. Yeah, the Dirty Dancing thing is interesting, because one of my big takeaways from watching this for the first time was, like, I feel like Footloose walked so Dirty Dancing could run or something. I don't think Dirty Dancing would exist without the success of Footloose. Do you see those movies linked?
Oh, I agree completely. Footloose was such a big, because we have a lot of movies that we understand as like movie musicals. Like, that's very much its own genre. But dance movies are an entirely different category, because it can it's a very expansive genre. It can be something like Footloose, where it's about dancing, or it can be something like Step Up, where dancing is the entire like purpose of narratives moving forward. So it's a big umbrella. And I do think that seeing the success of something like Footloose, where dancing is at the core, but it's also teenagers using dance as a means of having like larger political discussions, which I think is also happening in Dirty Dancing. Like, yeah, that movie does not get to exist without Footloose.
Mm-hmm. So I feel like we just have to acknowledge the kind of ridiculousness of the premise of Footloose. Like, I knew about it. I knew that John Lithgow played this preacher and that dancing was forbidden in a town, a small town where this story takes place. But just kind of seeing it play out and the seriousness with which all of these characters take the situation and I don't know, just like the fundamental premise of what's going on. I just kind of had to laugh as I was watching it. And I feel like people in the 80s probably were laughing at this too, but also like able to just like have a good time with this. So what has your experience been like, you know, dealing with like the narrative, I guess, of this story?
Well, so this is based on a real town. That's a thing a lot of people don't necessarily know. But there was a small town in Oklahoma where you could not dance. It was considered sinful.
Okay, I actually had no idea that this is true. I'm so you're blowing my mind right now.
I'm so glad to be the one to explain this to you. So yeah, it does, like, it seems very ridiculous, because I think if you are somebody who, you know, comes from a contemporary world or a progressive world, then you're like, dancing? Really? That's the thing? But that's real. There are places, you know, around, you know, the country at the time that had these very repressive sort of rules. And it is ridiculous. Like, it's a ridiculous thing to think about. So to see somebody use that as a narrative structure, I think it's very smart in a number of ways. Is that one, it is such a great example of pointing out like how stupid a lot of these sorts of rules are, because you could take Footloose and like push it into like book banning. People talk about Footloose all the time whenever there's book bannings, where they're like, wow, did we just turn into the town from Footloose? So yeah. It's like, it's become like colloquial to mean other things, which I really, really like. But then, you know, it's also coming from people who worked on like Fame. So it's people that know how to like make a really good quality splashy movie out of it. And I think in the 80s, people were super into the ridiculousness of it. But then when the story started coming out of like, no, this is kind of based on a real town. Like obviously the movie is not, but the law is. It was a reminder of like, oh, wow, we like to think of ourselves as these like progressive minded people and like, oh, we've come so far. But have we really?
Yeah, that's a great point. And the book banning thing is like immediately what I thought of when I was watching this, because that's unfortunately a thing that's still in the news right now in 2024, like against all odds, I guess. But and there's actually like scenes in this movie where they talk about banning books and stuff as well. And that seems to be like a bridge too far for John Lithgow's character, even though, you know, he is the one who is like holding this town in an iron grip in the aftermath of this accident that took the life of his son. And I couldn't help but feel like even though it does have a little bit of a ridiculous premise, there's still vestiges of this story that like unfortunately trickle all the way, you know, decades later into 2024. So it weirdly feels like a at the same time it feels like a time capsule, but it also feels like you know, a bit of a predictive or sort of timeless type of story in a way. So I one of the things that I thought about, we're not going to do like a full on breakdown of this movie or anything. I'm just kind of tossing out big ideas that I was thinking of. But like at the end of this movie, when John Lithgow's character ends up sort of relenting and allowing the dance to happen because he's basically dressed down by his wife when she gives him that speech in the empty church. I was thinking like, you know, how would this movie be different if it happened today, or how would this story be different if it took place today? And I kind of feel like he would never relent because people like that actually have no shame anymore and are so dug in.
Double down.
Yeah. That they would just like never admit that they made a mistake. So like this movie would not have the triumphant ending that it does because, I don't know, our world is like so much more polarized maybe, or the polarization is more pronounced or on Front Street or whatever. So, I don't know. How do you think about like, you mentioned the characters being able to use dance as like a way to raise political points and stuff like that. What do you think about the politics of Footloose or some of the conversations that these characters have in it?
So the thing that I have always really enjoyed about it is we refer to a lot of these movies on my teen podcast as like baby's first blank movies. And this is very much like baby's first radicalization movie where you're seeing teenagers realize like, hey, this is screwed up and we need to do something about it. And adults are not going to help us. So we have to take matters into our own hands, which I think is an important message to receive at any time, but especially when you're a teenager, because as teenagers, this is when you're finally getting old enough to understand like the true atrocities of the world, and you are never more passionate and more defiant than when you're a teenager, because you don't have all of those limitations of like, I might have to be quiet or I'll lose my job and not be able to feed my family. So, you know, it's very different during your teenage years, but especially in the 80s where obviously people were aware of the things that were happening around the world, but because something like social media doesn't exist, people are operating based off of what they are being presented through the news. You have to depend on what you're being given. Versus like today, we are all aware, like hyper aware, maybe overwhelmingly aware of everything that's going on around us. So I feel like kids today are already radicalized.
Yeah.
And they don't need a Footloose to teach them to stand up for themselves.
Yeah, that's a great point.
So I think in that regard, like this does become like this, you know, teen movies are time capsule movies and they always are. And Footloose, I feel like, is very much a time capsule of teenage rebellion and political radicalization. And I think there's something very charming in it. And it's one of those things where I don't like to look back at like, back in my day, I wasn't even alive in the 80s. So this isn't even my day. But it's one of those things where it's like, life did feel a little bit better when like the worst thing that could happen to you is that your town doesn't let you dance. Like, could you imagine what a life that would be versus today where it's like, oh, you're in kindergarten? Well, here's a school shooter drill. Enjoy.
Yeah. Bleak, bleak stuff. So, okay, let's take a break and then we'll come back. I have a few more points that I wanted to mention about Footloose.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So what do you think about the actual dancing in this movie, BJ? Like, when was the last time you've seen this? Is this movie like burned into your brain so much from childhood that you remember it pretty well? Or?
Oh, yeah, I remember this pretty well. I also watched it not that long ago because I don't know if it was last year or the year before, but Kevin Bacon did a commercial where he was recreating his, like, I have too many feelings, I must dance in the barn scene.
Yes.
And so then I rewatched Footloose and I was like, nah, this still really holds up. The dancing in this is still very, very fun. I like that it doesn't feel too choreographed. There's some kind of a disconnect that happens, like, unless you're doing a movie, I don't know, like Center Stage or something, where like choreography is part of it. I like the freestyle feeling of dance better in dance movies, and this is such a freestyle dance movie, which I really, really like. I also just love, you know, him teaching Hewitt how to dance, and yes, like those scenes are so sweet because this movie also has a ridiculous soundtrack.
Like, yes,
unbelievable needle drops. But this is such an infectious dance movie because it's one that you watch and you feel like you could actually do these moves yourself.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I was just looking at the soundtrack. So you've got Footloose by Kenny Loggins. You've got Holding Out for a Hero, Bonnie Tyler. You've got Dancing in the Streets, Shalimar. What else? Bang Your Head from Quiet Riot. Hurt So Good, John Mellencamp. Waiting for a Girl Like You from Foreigner. Like, yeah, there's like, this is
obviously,
like, yeah.
Let's Hear It for the Boy by Denise Williams.
Oh, of course. Yeah. That's, yeah, like just a certified banger. And I think that the montage that you mentioned where, Kevin Bacon's character is teaching Chris Penn's character how to dance to Let's Hear It for the Boy. It's just such a joyous filmmaking. Like, it just is, yes, one of those things that, like, it's a little cheesy, but I can't help but just, like, smile, you know, watch it with a gigantic smile on my face. It's just so, the combination of that imagery and, like, the classic montage thing of him, like, not having any rhythm whatsoever, but then paired with this music, and by the time it gets to the end of the song, he's, you know, doing these, like, pretty impressive dance moves. I was just like, man, this is what, like, we used to make things in this country, you know? So, anyway, just great stuff there.
It really is. When the brilliant, incomparable Jim Steinman passed away, RIP, I did mention Holding Out for a Hero, because Holding Out for anything that he wrote for Bonnie Tyler is the perfect needle drop. It doesn't matter what movie it's being used in, how it's being used, what genre the film, it's perfect. I don't care. but the Holding Out for a Hero scene in this is just magnificent. Like, it's so good. This movie's just, it's such a warm hug of a movie. It really is.
I watched, I think it was a GQ video with Kevin Bacon that came out, I think 4 years ago is what YouTube told me. And I watched his little part where he was reminiscing about working on Footloose. And he said that he actually was not a trained dancer going into this. And that surprised me because I thought he was. And even though this movie has that kind of like shaggy quality to the dancing that you were talking about, I still thought that he was like, maybe that was why he was hired or something. Because this was like one of his big breakout roles. Like, he was previously in Animal House and Friday the 13th and Diner, which is another movie that I still have not seen that I remember you recommending to me a while ago. But like, this was the thing that really sort of shot Kevin Bacon into like true movie star status. And I was just, yeah, kind of surprised to hear that like there actually was a lot of choreography here, even though, you know, some of the moves and stuff feel more free flowing than I guess you would anticipate. But like, I don't know. There's also like not a black person in sight in this movie, really, nope. Like outside of the opening montage of dancing feet. So that's a whole thing. And that's a sort of a weird vibe, especially at the end of the movie where they have that big party in the barn or whatever, and the big dance, and this one guy comes out and starts like break dancing, and like another person's like doing the robot and stuff, and I'm like, yeah, well, that's like kind of impressive, but you're a white guy, and it's just a weird situation we got here. So
yeah, that in lies the core issue of many coming of age movies just in general, is that they are extremely white. This one, no difference there.
Yeah. Yeah. I also was thinking about it as like through the lens of, you know, this being a teen movie. And I like searched back through the archives of your podcast, which is called This Ends at Prom, for those of you who have not listened to it. I was wondering if you guys had covered this yet. And it looks like you have not, or at least not officially. Maybe you've mentioned it in an episode here or there.
So we actually, we did Footloose. We on our Patreon, we do what we call the Sadie Hawkins dance, which is when we talk about teen movies that are mostly boy led.
Okay.
Since this is a male protagonist, we did it over there.
Gotcha. And, okay.
One thing that you mentioned that I wanted to touch on is how this is, you know, the movie that makes Kevin Bacon become like a superstar. And for me, this operates under a rule we have on our podcast, which we call like the Danny Zuko rule, which is like when you watch Grease for the first time, it doesn't matter how you feel about that movie. The second you are introduced to John Travolta as Danny Zuko, your brain like lights up and you go, that is a superstar. Like that person is a superstar. And I think Kevin Bacon has that same energy in Footloose where, yes, this is not his first movie. He obviously did, you know, Animal House and Friday the 13th, and he did, you know, Diner and all these other movies beforehand. But then you see him in Footloose and you're like, oh, that guy's got it. Like, that's mm-hmm. the guy. And I love those moments. Like, even if the movie itself like doesn't stand the test of time, when you have those moments, you're just like, wow, that's magic on screen. And it's a nice reminder of the magic of the movies.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just looking up some of the behind the scenes for Footloose, and it looks like Tom Cruise and Rob Lowe were both originally like sort of set up or being looked at to play the leads here. Mm-hmm. I guess the casting directors saw Tom Cruise dancing in Risky Business and were like, hey, let's get that guy. But he was unavailable at the time. This is the second movie in, I want to say a week or something, where I was talking with Chris on a recent episode about Streets of Fire, and like how Tom Cruise apparently was either offered the, I think he, if I remember right, he was offered the part of the lead guy, Tom Cody, in Streets of Fire. And we were just like, what a weird movie that would have been with Tom Cruise in the lead. And I feel like Tom Cruise in the lead of Footloose, it just would have been like a disaster or something. Like, he's just such a bizarre human being that like Kevin Bacon has that, you know, like a touch of humanity to him, or he actually feels like a real person. Whereas Tom Cruise, like even in the 80s, even like right around this time, which would have been like around the time of Top Gun, just kind of had like this otherworldly thing to him. And that's only become more pronounced as he's become, you know, a bigger superstar. But I don't know, just something about everything in the casting just really works in this movie, I think. So
it really does. And I like that you brought up the Tom Cruise thing, because something that I also know about this is that I know that Kevin Bacon was between either this or Christine, which I think he would have been good in Christine. Don't get me wrong. I think he would have done a fantastic job. But like, Keith Gordon is so synonymous with that role that it's like, I don't want to think of anybody else in that. So it's like everything worked out the way that it was supposed to. Kevin Bacon did Footloose, which is perfection. And Keith Gordon did Christine, which is a perfect performance for him. Like, that's perfect. We love it.
Yeah. I was a really big fan of the supporting cast in this movie. I thought Sarah Jessica Parker as Rusty was really great. She has that same sort of star quality that you're talking about, where she really just like pops off the screen.
Oh, yeah,
and then Chris Penn, man, like he died, what, 2006, I think it was. And yeah. I remember when he passed away and just thinking like, oh man, like this guy was in a lot of like adult movies that I saw where he played like hard characters, you know, like I think the first thing that I really came to know him from was he plays like an informant character or something in Rush Hour, in the first Rush Hour. And then like he's in Corky Romano and he's in like,
Love him in Corky Romano so much. Like it's such good meta casting for him.
Yeah. And so I kind of have like an image of who Chris Penn was, you know, as an actor in my mind. He was obviously in Reservoir Dogs as well. But like going back in time to this point in his career, this is unlike anything that I've ever seen him do. And I thought he was really good in it. And
he's cute in it too. Like, yeah. I can't handle how adorable he is when he's just trying so bad to be a good dancer and he's not good.
Yeah. And yeah, John Lithgow and Diane Wiest are really effective, I thought. I actually really like John Laughlin as Woody. I'm not like a huge John Laughlin guy. I don't really know a ton about his filmography. He's never really like popped for me as an actor before, but I thought he was really effective here as like the sort of like jacked guy who like is on Kevin Bacon's side. And sort of, there's one part where he like basically like slams three guys together in a phone booth who are trying to like mess with Kevin Bacon and his pals. And he's like, I got you, buddy. Like, you know, I'm going to use my immense frame here to just sort of like jack these guys up a little bit. So, anyway, he made an impression on me. I think Laurie Singer, she's the female lead of this movie. And I didn't really do that much for me. I don't know. Like, are you a fan of what Laurie Singer did in this movie? Like, am I on an island thinking that maybe she's might be the weak link of this? What do you think?
So I like Laurie Singer's performance in this a lot. She was on Fame, so she's genuinely like a very talented performer. But I think that her role in this is kind of underwritten. So I think she's doing the best of what she has, because for me, I have always viewed this movie as like, this is a vehicle for Ren McCormick. Like this is Kevin Bacon's movie. And Laurie is there because we have to have kind of this love story. We have to have the connection to the Reverend that makes it personal. But her character is a vehicle, like is not a vehicle, but like is a tool basically to further along Ren's story. So I like her in this, but I also understand that like the movie doesn't give her a lot for it. And I do know that there were other people that were considered, that like Madonna was considered at one point, which would have been a wild bit of stunt casting. Haviland Morris at one point, who people would know as she's Caroline in 16 Candles. So I'm curious if like her continuing to be in like teen movies would have done something with her career. And then I think Jennifer Jason Leigh was also one, which I think she would have been very, very fun too, because Jennifer Jason Leigh is the correct decision in any movie. So I do agree that I think that like Laurie doesn't get, you know, she doesn't get as much to do to let her shine as some of the other characters.
Yeah. Have you ever seen the remake that came out in 2011? Craig Brewer, the director of Hustle and Flow, made a remake of Footloose, and I have never seen that. Have you ever seen that one?
So I have seen it. I am not the biggest fan of it. it doesn't hit the way that I think it should, and I feel very bad, but it's because the lead, Kenny Wormald, who is like a phenomenal dancer, like an unbelievably talented dancer, he is not a very strong actor. And I know that when this was first announced, they were looking at Zac Efron and Chase Crawford. And I'm very sad that that is not the movie that we got. I think it would have been a huge hit if it was one of them. But when you have somebody as incredible as Kevin Bacon, following into those shoes is not an easy thing to do. The one thing this movie does get credit for is it does have a little bit more of a diverse cast. Not a lot, not a lot more, but, you know, some of it. And Julianne Hough, this was like in that time period where she was really big on Dancing with the Stars. So they were like, we're going to put her in the Footloose remake and we're going to do Rock of Ages and we're just going to get her and put her in here and everything, which is like fine. But all of those characters end up being the same character. Because that's just what it is. So it's not great. The dancing is beautiful and it's very high energy and it's gorgeous. It's a great dance movie, but it is the shadow cast from the original just completely eclipses this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not a huge Julianne Hough fan like at all, so I'm probably going to be skipping this one. And Kevin Bacon even mentioned in that GQ video that I was talking about earlier, he was like, yeah, I know they remade it, and like the dancing in the new one is probably better than the dancing in, you know, the one I was in, because they specifically went out after dancers first. And I'm realizing now that like maybe that was his way of like, you know, being nice about it, but also, yeah, but also like throwing a little shade at the quality of the acting in the movie. So, yeah, so there's that. Okay. Any other, I guess, like closing thoughts on Footloose or anything that sticks out to you that you wanted to mention about this movie before we wrap things up here?
I mean, getting Kenny Loggins to do that track, like, unreal. really what I have. I feel that about most Kenny Loggins tracks for movies, though.
Yeah, it's been like a week or something since I've seen this, and there are still, you know, I'll go like a couple days and my brain will be cleared, and then all of a sudden Kenny Loggins will just come roaring back into my mind, and I'll just like, you know, it'll be that full earworm kind of vibe. So okay, actually, before we wrap up, I wanted to read a listener email, and I figured you would have some thoughts on this subject, BJ. It's kind of a downer, I'll warn you. But Braden from Fort Worth, Texas writes, "It seems all roads are leading to Madam Web being a critical and financial failure, which I think is unfortunate for many reasons, chief among them how it might affect S.J. Clarkson's career." She's the director of the movie. "This is Clarkson's second feature after 2010's Toast, and I wonder if Madam Web will put her in the halls of quote-unquote director jail. There is a pattern in Hollywood. Kathy Yan directed Birds of Prey in 2020 to critical success, but not financial success, and she's only directed an episode of Succession since then. Patty Jenkins directed Wonder Woman 1984 in 2020 to mixed results critically and financially, although the pandemic was certainly a factor. Her announced movie Rogue Squadron seems less and less likely to happen. Chloe Zhao directed Eternals in 2021 to mixed results. Ultimately, my question is, why does it seem like female blockbuster directors only get one shot, and if they miss, that's it? I know Hollywood is a business and all that, but the discrepancy between male directors getting second chances seems way higher than female directors. I guess this isn't breaking news, but more of the same, unfortunately. I think everyone deserves a second chance. Anyway, sorry for the long email. Love the pod, and I'm wishing you and the Slash Film crew well." So thank you, Braden, for that email. And yeah, I just want to sort of like give you the floor on that one, BJ, because I'm guessing this is something you've thought a lot about.
Oh, this is something that I feel quite passionately about, and especially right now with Madam Web, because the question that is being posed here, the answer is in the question. Yes, this is a thing that happens. Women are not given the space or grace to fail, and men are consistently allowed to fail upward or mediocre their way upward. I have no intention of shaming the screenwriters Matt Sazama and Burke Sharpless, because writing these movies are not easy. You have all of the studio notes, you have production notes, you have all these things going on. So what the script looked like, you know, when they, you know, went into this versus how it ended up, we have no idea. But the fact that they wrote Dracula Untold, The Last Witch Hunter, Gods of Egypt, Power Rangers, and Morbius before this, and were allowed to continue writing and were never put in director's jail or screenwriter jail, is a testament to the way that we allow men to have failures, to have mediocre performances, and no one cares. But when women fail, the message that so many people in positions of power seem to take away from is, well, I guess that means women can't do this, instead mm-hmm. of looking at the multitude of reasons why something might not have worked. And so I'm very much hoping that S.J. Clarkson does not end up in director jail, but instead, you know, refocuses and gets to go back to working on films that are probably more in line with something that, you know, she's more familiar with. Maybe she gets to do a TV series. You know, she was working on a bunch of episodes of Made for Love, and that was a great show. So maybe,
yeah, she's had like an incredible TV career so far.
Yeah. So maybe she'll get to like be a showrunner on something that she's really, really passionate about, because we also don't know the circumstances of how she was hired for this. Like, is this something she was really, really passionate about, or is she a hired gun director? Like, we don't know these things. Mm-hmm. And so that's what then becomes very frustrating whenever, you know, women, especially in the blockbuster or superhero sphere, end up in, you know, director's jail. I'm hoping it doesn't happen, because now I think people are a lot more aware of it and have a tendency to hold studios and production houses, like hold them to task when this does happen, to be like, why aren't you hiring this person? They're obviously great, and we can see the misogyny of what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that means it will not happen. But if it does happen, I will not be surprised, because that's showbiz, baby.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because it feels like over the past few years, it has become more of a, like, more light has been shined on that topic. And I think it's because a lot of the female directors who have been put in director's jail have come out and actually, like, spoken out about it, and then, like, told people about their experiences and talked about how unfair and how, you know, much of a garbage decision that was for them to basically be like blocked out of the industry for a long time. I'm actually going to put a couple links to some articles where they have like direct quotes from people like Amy Heckerling and Patty Jenkins and people along those lines who have Mimi Leader, I think, is another one too. So The Guardian wrote about this a few years ago. A website called Stylist wrote about this as well. And then I also noticed email inspired me to try to dig into the numbers a little bit. And I looked up and found that last year, the Annenberg Inclusion Initiative took a look at the top 1,600 films from 2007 to 2022 and performed the largest and most rigorous analysis of inclusion in film that's ever been performed. And they were primarily looking at stats for characters who appeared in movies, but they also studied behind the camera stuff too. And they found that in 2022, 8.8% of top grossing film directors were women, which is less than a percentage point higher than the 8% that we had back in 2008. So, like, to your earlier point, BJ, of like, it seems like we've come a long way in some aspects of our culture. It seems like that sometimes, but like when you really drill down into the data, the increases are not nearly as much as we sort of like hope they should be. So I just wanted to mention that. And
if people are, you know, interested at all, and if you're chronically online like I am, there are so many incredible discussions happening on social media, on both like TikTok and X, formerly known as Twitter, where people are talking about how studios are straight up owning up to the fact that they're rolling back on diversity initiatives that were put in 2020 following the murder of George Floyd, and how they're not following up on any of that. And it's awful. Like, it's really bleak and sad. And it's really interesting to me how, you know, they'll use the flowery language of, well, we're just trying to appeal to as wide of an audience as possible, and how that always ends up meaning cis, white, straight, male, conservative leaning.
Yeah. I guess I don't really have like a great takeaway from that, but thank you, Braden, for writing in. And hopefully some of these resources that I'll provide in the show notes can point you in the right direction to some actual quotes from people who have been affected by this. And the Annenberg Inclusion Initiative data, I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well, if you want to like dig into different aspects in front of the camera and stuff too. So that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about Footloose at slashfilm.com. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, normally, no episode this coming Monday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe to our newsletter. There is a link for that in the show notes. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all next week.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.